Thank you for tuning in to Richardson Cove Baptist Church Podcast. We join our weekly broadcast of our Sunday morning worship service.
So I want us to look at the heart of Jesus. You know, when we think about what we've gone through the destruction, we've gone through what caused Jerusalem to be in ruin and waste. We went through the whole rebuilding stage, through the book of Ezra, through the book of Nehemiah. And when you come to the end of the book of Nehemiah, you're kind of near the end of the Old Testament in a way, because Malachi, the last book of the Old Testament, is around the same time as when Nehemiah finishes up. So you finish up the book of Nehemiah, and you're about at that spot where you got those years of what we call the silent years. It's not that God was silent, it's just we don't have any more books included that are part of this Bible that we hold today. So then after that, what happens? The birth of Christ happens. So I thought, man, we've been in the Old Testament so long, let's get in the New Testament. Let's talk a little bit about Jesus. Let's talk about some exciting things. And so we're going to read in Psalm number 119. Imagine that, we're going to be in the New Testament. We're still reading out of the Old Testament. But stand with me and you'll see where we're going as we open up in Psalm 119. We're just going to read the first 7 verses. Blessed are the undefiled in the way, who walk in the law of the Lord. Blessed are they that keep his testimonies, and that seek him with a whole heart. They also do no iniquity. They walk in his ways. Thou hast commanded us to keep the precepts diligently. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep thy statutes. Then shall I not be ashamed when I have respect unto all thy commandments. I will praise thee with uprightness of heart when I shall have learned thy righteous judgments. I got excited thinking about the heart of Jesus. And the reason I want to read Psalm 119 a little bit is because it talks about the heart and where our heart is. Do we have a heart for God? Do we really have a heart for God? And so I've been reading some different devotions, reading some different books, and getting some insight. And I want to pose this question to you as we begin this wholehearted Jesus thing. Let's say for the next 24 hours, starting right now, for the next 24 hours, Jesus is going to take over your body. He's going to take over your body for the next 24 hours. So what happens in your mind immediately? What do we start thinking about? The questions arise, is my attitude going to change if Jesus is in control of my body? If he is literally living it now. Now your circumstances have not changed. You still got the same family. You still got the same job. Nothing's changed except he has completely taken over your life, completely. So does your attitude change? Are you going to be apprehensive about certain things that you once were? Are you going to look at the same things that you would look at normally? Are you going to hear the same things? Are you going to go to the same places over the next 24 hours that you normally would go to? Think about the dynamics of what is going to change in your life. Now, if we have drastic change, that's a scary thing, because it means we're apparently not doing what we should be doing if Christ enters into our body and literally takes over complete control of our body. And I know that kind of sounds crazy a little bit, but in all truth, we know if we believe in Jesus Christ, he is already in our body, correct? Look at a verse of Scripture with me, Philippians chapter 2, verse 5. It says, let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus. So we have the opportunity now to have the mind of Christ. Galatians 2 and 20 says, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Romans 8, 9 says, but ye are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if so be that the Spirit of God dwell in you. Now, if any man have not the Spirit of Christ, he is none of his. So if Jesus literally lives within us, and if you're saved by his blood, then he does, doesn't he? He lives within us. So why would things change? If we already have him in us as children of God, then why would things have to change if we actually gave him complete control? Well, it means we're apparently not doing something right. Now, I know what we're going to say. I know because I have the same excuses that you do. You see, we're all similar in the excuses we come up with why we're not following the Lord. It's my nature. Well, it's just my nature. I have a hot temper. It's my nature to just get mad. It's my nature to be pessimistic in everything. I'm always going to look at the bad side. I'm not going to be looking at the good side. Well, it's just my nature. My mom and daddy was gossipers, so I'm just raised in a gossipy family, so I'm just going to be a gossiper. So it's just my nature to be a gossip. It's my nature to do the things that I do. And we feel like that gives us a way out and an excuse to not obey God, to not surrender to the will of God. So whatever it is that you've got going on in your life that's not pleasing to the Lord, that you say, well, it's just part of my nature, then I'm going to say, wrong. It is not part of your nature. Now, I will give you this, and I will give us this. We live inside these fleshly bodies. We have a carnal mind, but he also said we have the ability to have the mind of Christ. So we have some excuse, a small percentage of an excuse to say, yeah, we do have a nature that is selfish. We do have a nature that gossips. We do have a nature that always looks to the bad. We have a nature that has a hot temper. All these things are pointing to this carnal nature and this fleshly nature that we have. But listen, friends, if we have been saved by the blood of Christ, we have him living within us. So all these things that we attribute to our nature are not the nature of the Spirit of God. So we have, listen, we're without excuse. Without excuse in why are we not obedient to God? Why are we not surrendered to him? Why do we not serve him completely and totally? Why do we give in to these things? I believe it has to do with the heart. I think it's a heart condition. I think our hearts are not where they need to be. We know the potential is there. I know that it's possible. Scotty said all things are possible with him. With us, nothing is impossible, but with him, everything is possible. We get to the point to where I think our problem is we're satisfied living a mediocre Christian life. We're satisfied with just coming to church and doing our little part here and just doing some things for God, but allowing us to fulfill and satisfy all those selfish lusts that we have for this carnal mind and this carnal body. We're satisfied with that because we know that if we're saved by his blood, that we are going to heaven, and we use that as a crutch. It's the only thing I got against eternal security. Gives you a reason to just think we can do whatever we want to do and get away with it. There's not going to be repercussions. There's not going to be any consequences to the things that we do, and I'm still going to heaven anyway. Yeah, listen, I know that I'm going to heaven because I believe in Jesus. I know that I made that choice as a kid, and he came into my heart, and nobody's big enough to come in there and take the Spirit out. That's the only way the Spirit's leaving is somebody bigger comes in and knocks him out. You got a strong man in a house. There's no way somebody's going to come in and take that house over unless somebody bigger and stronger comes in. Nobody bigger than God. So I know I'm going to heaven. I know I have that security because it's not a matter of the things I do that keeps me saved. It's my belief in him that saves me and seals me. So I have that. But we can get to the point where if we're not careful, well, I'm just going to heaven anyway, so what's it going to hurt for me to live this way? I'm going to heaven anyway, so what does it hurt for me to be selfish and to satisfy this anger that I have? Because sometimes it just makes me feel good to just get mad all over. Sometimes it really gives me a thrill and a rush to be able to give some sweet, juicy gossip about somebody. So when we get this craving and this drawing, when we're tempted, when this nature is tempted to want to lash out and do those things, the problem we have and what keeps us going back again and going back to the sin and being sucked into that temptation is because we have a heart condition. We're not fulfilling the heart of Jesus. So that's what I want to look at today. I want to look at some different parts of his heart. I don't know how many parts there are to a heart. We're going to look at some of them today. And one of the most beautiful things in thinking about the heart of Jesus is this, is the purity of his heart. Man, wouldn't you love to be pure? Isn't it awesome to think, man, if we could just be just as pure as that little jug of water right there, if we could just be just pure, if we could, if all the imperfections could just be taken away, if we could just filter out everything that's just not God, so that when we're here, we're just a big lump of just God, you know, what God put in there, pure and clean and holy before God. 1 John chapter number 3, verse 3 through 5 says this, "And every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself." If we've got the hope in us, we can purify ourselves. "Even as he is pure." It's saying Jesus is pure. "Whosoever committeth sin transgresseth also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. And you know that he was manifested to take away our sins, and in him is zero sin." So he's saying that Jesus himself was pure throughout. I know we want to say, yeah, but the only reason he was pure is because he was all God. Yeah, he was all God, but guess what? He was all man too. He felt every temptation the same way you and I feel temptation. He felt the struggles the same way you and I feel those struggles. He didn't utilize that superpower of being God just to exempt him from any temptation or pain or abuse that he might feel. He didn't all of a sudden make himself become something else so that he didn't feel the ridicule that he had. That the pain when people would beat him with those whips, and when people would mock him and spit on him when he's dying on that cross. No, he didn't go to a different place. He felt the pain as you and I would physically feel the pain. So when Jesus walked in that body and he let us know that he was pure and he was holy, he's letting us know we also can be pure and holy. 1 Peter 1:19 says, "But with the precious blood of Christ, as a lamb without blemish and without spot." Back in the Old Testament, when we read about Joseph, and I think it's one of the coolest stories ever, you know that Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers. They put him in a pit, we're going to let him die. And then they saw slave traders come by and they said, well, let's don't just let him die, let's make some money off of him while we can. Talk about some greedy brothers. And so they sold him into slavery. He ended up being a servant in Potiphar's house. And Joseph, because of the man he was, because he was pure of heart, wasn't he? Joseph was pure of heart. And because of that purity, he was a man that everywhere he went, he blessed the people he was around. You know, people that are right with God, they become a blessing to other people just by their presence. Are there people that you just enjoy being around? Because there's something about them. There's something about their attitude. There's something about how they smile at you and how they speak to you. There's something about their countenance that you just enjoy being around them. So if you know you're going to get to go to dinner with that person, if you know you're going to get to meet them out for a day or something, or you know you're going to be passing by them and get a talk with them, or on the phone you see them call, it's that person that you go, I'm not going to reject them. I'm going to answer that one. It's the one that you like to be around. Joseph was one of those guys. He was one of those guys that everybody wanted to be around because of who he was, because he was pure. And he wanted to serve God, and he wanted to be everything he could be for the Lord. So the house of Potiphar prospered, and he made a lot of money, and he gained great wealth, and there was health, physical health within his home. It seemed as though every aspect of his house was blessed because of the presence of this pure man, Joseph. Well, Joseph was coming into the house one day, and he was making sure all the books are good, making sure everything's accounted for. And when he came in, no other man was in the house. They were all out working in the fields and taking care of all those things. And so when Joseph came in, it was only him and Potiphar's wife were the only two there. I want to read a verse of scripture to you that I get a little chuckle whenever I read it. Genesis chapter number 39, because I try to envision the situation and what must have happened. Yeah, Genesis 39. Verse number 12. "She caught him by his garment." So he's coming through the house, and she is plotting. She's been planning this. She probably sent what men were servants were left in the house. She probably sent them out because she didn't want anybody home because she wanted to get a hold of Joseph. I'm going to say he was a handsome young man. I'm going to say he was very attractive. Not only how he presented himself, it wasn't only the spiritual thing that made him beautiful and made him somebody you wanted to be around, which she felt that, I'm sure, also. But she saw him to be somebody very attractive, and she cared for him, and she wanted to have a relationship with him. So in Genesis 39 and verse 12, it says, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." She ran everybody off, grabbed him by his coat, and said, "Come in here in the bedroom. I want you." And he left his garment in her hand, and he fled. And I love this. And he got him out. He said, "I'm getting me out." I mean, when she grabbed a hold of his coat, he was caught in a situation. Keeping in mind, he is owned, he is property belonging to Potiphar and Potiphar's wife. He could have given himself to her and fulfilled that lust that she had, but he chose to say, "You know something, even though I have been wronged by my brothers and everybody else I've come in contact with, I've been wronged by everybody since then. Since I've been a young man, I've been wronged by everybody, but I am still remaining pure and holy before God. I am not going to let these circumstances in my life cause me to steer away from my relationship with God. I'm not going to give in to this. I'm not going to be sucked into this." So I'm going to tell you, for a young man of his age, I'm sure, and hormones going crazy, and just being that young man, what an enticement this could have been for him. I mean, I'm sure she was probably an attractive lady. She was a lady of great wealth. She could have been somebody that could have put him up and taken care of him financially for years to come. It would have been their own little secret. But when he saw this temptation and she grabbed him by the coat and she said, "Come into my bedroom," he literally turned and he ran and he got him out. And he said, "I'm getting out of this situation." I'm thinking, man, that's the purity right there that God wants us to have. God wants us to be pure in every situation. You may not be faced with a situation like that. You may not be faced with somebody. We may not be as handsome as Joseph was. But temptation is still the same, isn't it? A lot of times we're tempted when we're by ourselves and nobody else is around and we've got nothing more than just a cell phone in our hand. Wow, what kind of worlds can we open up with a cell phone in just a matter of a couple of pushes of the button? What kind of things can we expose ourselves to by our choice? "Oh, well, I actually was typing in this and this just showed up, so I'm just going to follow that trail and see where it goes." Yeah, I'm not dumb. Satan's not dumb either. He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows how to tempt us. He knows how to draw us. He knows how to suck us into this little trap. And it starts with something little and it grows to something bigger and bigger and bigger. And God's telling us and he's screaming to us, "I want you to remain pure." But purity is not going to come by us putting ourselves on an island and taking away the internet so that we can't be tempted. No, purity is going to come when we put on our big boy britches and we decide, "I'm choosing to stand for purity." That's when we're going to start being pure. I know that we would love to put restraints on everything around our life. We'd love to put that electric fence so when we go so far, we get the jolt and we know to not go out through there. And it takes the choice away when we force these restraints. I'm not saying these restraints are a bad thing if they're helpful and if they help you, but it still, my friend, is a choice that we've got to make to choose to be holy and to be pure before God. It's something I've got to decide in my heart. I want to be like Joseph was. I want to be the man like he was. I don't want to be the one giving into those temptations. I want to be where he is. Daniel decided, "I'm not going to eat the food that the king's putting out on his banquet table. I'm not going to be in here partying and feasting while all my brothers are here in their cells and they're eating a pulse I mean, that just sounds disgusting. Pulse. I don't even know what it is, but I guarantee it's disgusting. Some kind of mashed up, mushed up. Okay, I'm going to say it. Some of you are going to get mad at me. Grits. I know that. I always be one in the house that loves grits. Yeah, after you put a gallon of butter and sugar on it and cinnamon, it's probably okay. But yeah, there you go. See, he said, I'm not going to go over here and I'm not going to be eating and feasting. I'm not going to give an in. I'm not going to indulge myself while my brothers are here in their cells and they're eating this disgusting pulse. They're eating grits. I'm not going to do that. So he said, I'm choosing to live the way they are, and I'm because I want to be pure before the Lord. And here's the thing about purity. Purity is not really found in all the things that we do that are seen by men, by this world. Purity are the choices we make when nobody is around us. That's when where the rubber hits the road. That's where purity really comes in. So what's another thing we think about when we think about the heart of God or Jesus? Well, we think about that purity. We think how important it is. Are we living a life that's pointing toward purity? Are we? That's the first question. Next thing we find in his heart is a peaceful heart. Colossians 3 and verse number 15 says, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also ye are called in one body, and be ye thankful. Peaceful. I wonder how, if we had enough money, how much money would it cost to buy peace? Bigger than the lottery, wouldn't it? Bigger than $700-800 million, wouldn't it, to buy peace? And God made it intentionally so peacefulness cannot be bought. He made it so we can't purchase that. He made it so that we have to strive for that. He made it so that it is a gift that only He can give. See, you're not going to find peace in the world. You're not going to find peace by buying bigger toys, more expensive toys. We're not going to find peace by finding that one vehicle that we've searched for a year and we finally found it and it's just the price we want. When we get in it, first thing's going to happen is you're going to get a dent in it because somebody's going to hit you. We're not going to find peace by finding that one person. You know, I want that perfect mate. I want that perfect person. It's going to be just right for me. Boy, when I find them, my world is really going to be at peace. Are you kidding me? That's when the work really begins, right? When we start a relationship. By the way, my baby got engaged, and I don't know about this, my baby. Yeah. Empty nesters soon to be. That's crazy. So Jesus was always at peace in everything that he dealt with, every situation that he was in. When there was a crowd following him, 5,000 plus people, and Jesus is there, and What are these guys? What are the disciples doing? They're running around in circles. What are we going to do? It's getting late. They're getting hungry. What are we going to do? We're hungry. They're hungry. Everybody's hungry. Everybody's complaining. What are we going to do? What's the first thing we do when we find ourselves in a difficult situation? Well, we just start whining and crying and getting confused and we crying out. What are we going to do? So they come up to Jesus and say, Jesus, look at all these people. What are we going to do? We don't have enough money to go out and buy food for them. And it's starting to get late. We better send them all home. Get them away from us. So what did Jesus say? I love how Jesus responded in these very stressful, intense situations. What did Jesus say? Well, what do you got? I mean, Jesus is so cool. He's like the coolest person ever. They said, what are we going to do, Jesus? These people are starving to death. He said, well, what do you guys got? They started looking around. We ain't got, you know, they're pulling their pockets out. I got nothing. I got a kid over here that's got a basket full of fish and bread. Will you just give me what you got? And I'll bless it. And it'll be enough to take care of everybody so they have something to eat. You're even going to have baskets left over to take home with you. I think about the peacefulness of Christ in every situation. How quick are you to get stressed out? You've got something you've been working on, been planning for. I know Scotty and I talked about this past week. I'm going to pick on you a little bit, brother. How? I mean, because this is us, isn't it? How you're working on something and everything's coming together. Then, bam, something comes in and just knocks it sideways. You go, and it's not even your fault. How in the world do I find? So what do? We got a choice then as to what we're going to do. I sat in Scotty's office the other day this week, and he said, man, let's just pray. I got to pray. I mean, because literally, these things we stress out over are already out of our hands. We're not helping by stressing out over it. What does God want us to do? He wants us to be at peace because He is the peaceful one. He is the only one that brings peace. So if we want peace, we got to go to the one that's giving it out by bucketfuls. And we got to get a hold of Him. So that's what we got to do. There was a great storm that came. The disciples were just frantic. They were screaming. They were crying. They went down in the bottom, in the belly of the ship. And what did they find? They found Jesus sleeping. How do you sleep through a storm? I sleep pretty good. I sleep like a rock. How did Jesus sleep through a storm? Did He not know the storm was there? Duh. He's Jesus. He's God. Did He not know the storm was here? Is He not afraid? That's a good question. You think Jesus was ever afraid? I think His fear was conquered because He was always peaceful. I think His fear was always conquered because He always knew whose hand the storm was in. So if Jesus is doing everything He needs to do, and He's doing everything right, then if a storm rears its ugly head in His life, He knows the Father is in complete control of the storm. And if He's supposed to perish in the storm, if He's supposed to make it through the storm, if He's going to be on the boat for 3 days and somebody come and find Him, He knows that's the plan of the Master, and He is at peace with that, whatever it is. That peacefulness that only God can give. Don't think when we get bent out of shape over things not going right in our life, we're going to fix it and we're going to help it. As a matter of fact, we're probably going to make it worse. Because if we make decisions under the heat, the pressure's on, we make decisions. 90% of the times we make the wrong decision. So what do we got to do? We got to do like we did in the office. We got to get down and pray, don't we, Scotty? Get in there and we just pray. And hey, you know something, God, you're so big, you got this. I don't know what you're going to do. I have no idea what you're going to do, but you got this thing. We've come this far with You. We trusted You this far. You give us that peace. Now all of a sudden we got this huge bump in the road. We got this big rock. Something's got to happen. We either got to go over it or bust it up and go through it. Or you're going to roll it out of the way. Something's got to give, God. But I'm going to trust You, and I'm just going to rest in You. Man, how good does it feel to be able to rest in God in the midst of chaos in our life? I mean, Jesus really wants us to understand about peacefulness because He wants us to understand how important it is. Because He knew the world was going to get to where it is today. And you know something, another 10 years, I imagine the stress level was just going to, we think it's as high as it can go. I'm going to say another 10 years if He tarries, we're going to be maxing out some major stress levels in our lives. Look at the suicide rate. Look at the young people that are taking their lives because of the stress they're under in school. I mean, the world is a tough place to live, isn't it? So some people choose to just cop out and get out of here because they can't live with the stress. Jesus is screaming to us and telling us, there is a way to make it through everything in your life. I will bring you peace. You got to ask for the peace. You got to desire the peace. Because the heart of Christ is a heart of purity, and it is also a heart of peace. When Jesus was in Gethsemane and He had prayed with His guys, you know, they fell asleep on Him. But when He got them all gathered together and He's basically saying to them, you know, it's about time for Me to be taken. The soldiers came in and asked Him who do you seek? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And He said, I am He. And so as they came to get a hold of Jesus, what did Peter do? Peter stressed out, man. He grabbed this little knife he had. Dagger he had, he was trying to cut anybody and everything he could. He ended up cutting Malchus, I think maybe his name, cut his ear off. I mean, that's crazy. Cut the guy's ear off. So I can imagine the stress that's going on. These guys are intense. All of his disciples are terrified that Jesus is going to be taken. We're going to be taken. It's all going to be bad stuff. Man, we got to fight our way out. That's a problem we have, and that's a mistake we make, is we think we can fight our way out. I'm not smart enough to fight my way out of the situations I'm in. What I need to do is not get stressed out about it. I need to hold on to the peace of God. Say, God, I'm going to tell you something. I have no idea what you're going to do, but God, I want that peace. I want to know you're here with me, and I'm going to pray till you give me that peace. So what did Jesus do? How did Jesus handle the situation? He calmed Peter down. Stop. What are you doing? You're crazy. You're acting ridiculous, Peter. We're not coming here with a sword, man. We're not coming to fight. We're not coming to kill these people. Jesus went over and he knelt down and he picked up the guy's ear and he put it back on. And I don't know if maybe he said a word or something. Boom, the ear just was healed and it was back on his body again. That's how Jesus handled life. The very people that were coming to take him away, Jesus could have killed them all in one swoop. Did he not say, whom do you seek? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And he said, I am he. And they fell down as dead men. They were numb. They couldn't do anything. At that moment, Jesus could have walked away with his disciples and escaped and nobody come after him. But Jesus is proving to us and showing us that even in the most difficult of times, he held to the peace that he had in his relationship with the Father. My friends, peace is greater than almost anything you can have, isn't it? What's another attribute that he had? And I think this is a great one. It's obedience. He had obedience. Luke chapter number 4 and verse number 18 says, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. One of the first messages that he actually preached publicly. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised. Okay, I want to talk about obedience for just a minute because I want you to understand obedience is not always an easy thing. There's a verse of Scripture right after Jesus was baptized. What happened after Jesus was baptized? We know the story, don't we? We know that Jesus went up into the mountains. He was tempted. He went 40 days without food, without water. He fasted. And then at the end of those 40 days, after the body was exhausted, we know that was a miraculous thing. You and I can't go 40 days without food or water. We got to have some sort of nourishment to some degree. That was just a miraculous fast that Jesus was on, a divine fast. So he found himself there being tempted by the devil, and the devil tempted him in every area that he thought he might could really get a hold of him and stop this whole salvation thing forever. Here's the key. You notice that the Bible says in Matthew and other Gospels that he was led by the Spirit into the mountains to be tempted by the devil. I don't like that. I don't like the fact that he was led into the mountains to be tempted. The Spirit led him intentionally to be tempted. Now, we know that there were other motives involved with Jesus going to the mountain. We know that there's a reason why the Spirit led him there, because he wanted to be confirmed as the one, the Christ, the Son of the living God that come to take away the sins of the world. And this is a way of proving to the rest of the world, yes, this is him. This is the one we've been talking about that was going to come. But still yet, the Spirit led him into a place. Not only is he going to withhold himself from any food and any water for 40 days, but at the end of that, everything that his natural self would desire, our natural bodies would crave, and we would want when we're weak and in that fragile condition, are the very things that Satan's going to throw at us. Those things the Spirit led him into. Listen, not everything God leads us into is going to be easy breezy, mac and cheesy. It's going to be tough when the Spirit leads us to do those things. Most of the time it's going to be things we don't want to do because we're selfish. I don't want to obey somebody else. I want to obey me. I want to obey what I want to do. I want to just sit on the couch and push the buttons and eat popcorn. That's what I want to do. But when the Spirit of God comes in, he's telling us something that he wants us to do. It contradicts what we want to do and what our desires are. But Jesus had an obedient heart. He obeyed everything the Father told him to do. And you read so many times now that he was led by the Spirit. The Spirit was upon him. The Spirit was with him. And so everything that Jesus did, it was because he was led by the Spirit of God and he obeyed that leadership. He would go up into the mountains and pray. Why would he go up in the mountains to pray? So he could get that leadership of what needed to happen next. He went and prayed in the mountains for a while, came down, called the disciples. He'd go up in the mountains, come down, and the next thing would happen. Jesus found himself listening to the Father speak to him through that Spirit, just as he's teaching us we need to do. And that obedience must follow. He still chose to obey the leadership of the Father. He said at one point, I must needs go through Samaria. I've got to go through Samaria because there's a reason the Spirit of God is leading me there. Paul got the Macedonian call. They said, come over here, Paul, and help us. Preach to us. Tell us the gospel. Tell us about Jesus. So he listened to the Spirit of God and he followed that call. Jesus was obedient even to the death on Calvary. Wow. Did Jesus know he was going to die? Yes, he knew he was going to die, didn't he? Yet Jesus was obedient even to the very death on the cross. Goodness, how obedient are we? When we compare ourselves with Jesus, how obedient are we? Colossians 3 and verse 13 talks about another aspect of the heart of Jesus, forgiveness. Man, I like forgiveness. Forbearing one another, forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. Forgiveness. Okay, now here's something unique about Jesus that I've never really thought about a lot till just this past week in forgiveness. When somebody wrongs you, you decide if you want to forgive them or not, right? After the fact, after it's been done, after whatever's been accomplished, however they've wronged you, cheated you, lied about you, gossiped about you, tried to do you in or whatever, stabbed you in the back, whatever's happened between you and somebody else, once it's made public to you, once you're aware of the situation, you got that choice to make. Am I going to forgive that person or not? So you still have a choice. You may not want to forgive that person. You may say you do and still not forgive them. I want to tell you how forgiving Christ is. He had 12 men that he said, guys, we're going to get up here. We're going to have the Passover feast. And we know before he went to the Calvary that he initiated the Lord's Supper that day. What's one of the most important aspects of that entire evening while he was there gathering that upper room is when he washed the feet of his disciples. Now I want you to think about this. All 12 of these men, we know how gross and dirty men's feet are anyway. They're just nasty. Imagine walking around getting all the mud and the filth and nastiness on them. I don't even know if any of them owned a pair of toenail clippers. I'm going to tell you something, it's probably ugly. This is gross. So you got Jesus here with a basin of water and a pitcher, and he's got a towel draped around him. And Jesus says, as these guys are coming in, they're all talking about everything that's going on. Jesus says, come on, guys, come over and sit down over here. I'm going to come down there. I'm going to wash your feet. Peter said, you are crazy. You ain't washing my feet. You're not washing my feet, Jesus. Jesus said, Peter, if you don't let me wash your feet, I have no part with you. You can't be a part of what I'm doing here. He said, if you're going to wash me, then just wash me all over. You know how Peter is. He's one extreme to the other. He said, but Peter, you're not dirty all over. It's just your feet. But you got to let me wash your feet. And I've never really thought about it as Jesus went down and each person that he washed their feet. When he stood before Thomas and he's washing his feet, he's looking up at Thomas. He's looking at his feet and Thomas maybe had a little tear in his eye. I can't believe you're washing my feet, Jesus. I'm not worthy for you to wash my feet. The whole time he's washing his feet, Jesus is thinking in his mind, this is the very man that after I die on the cross and I'm resurrected, he's going to be the very one that says it ain't true. There is no way he's alive. I want to tell you something. Jesus is forgiving Thomas by washing his feet before Thomas ever says that he doubted that Jesus had been resurrected. Jesus goes over to Peter. Peter, let me wash your feet. They have the dialogue. Finally, Peter sits down. He calms down. I think he's a pretty intense guy, Peter is. He's washing his feet. And he's thinking, this guy is going to deny me three times that he even knows my name. And he's going to blaspheme my name. Yet I'm willing to wash his filthy, grimy, nasty feet. knowing what he's about to do to me. Then Jesus goes to somebody, and I've tried to find a place where he wasn't there. But my friends, I believe Judas got his feet washed. Whew. What does that bring to the situation? Can you imagine Jesus saying, all right, Judas, roll him up, and he's probably sitting there bouncing the bag of money in his hands. What can we do with this? What can we do with this? Knowing what he's got in mind to go down and sell Jesus out. Jesus got down with that bowl. He got down with that towel. Maybe he even saved Judas till last. I don't know. Maybe he did him first. But while Jesus washing the feet of Judas, he's thinking the whole time, you're going to go out of here and you're going to deny me and you're going to cause the Romans to come and get me. They're going to crucify me and I'm going to die. And you're going to have a big part in that. You are the son of perdition. You've been lost from the very start. But Jesus, knowing all this, still wanted to wash his filthy, grimy, nasty feet and offer him a chance at redemption. That's forgiveness, my friends. Forgiveness is when it don't matter what you've done, Jesus knew what we were going to do before we ever did it. What does the Bible say? While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So now I'm going to ask you this question before we look at the next one. Are you a forgiving heart? I don't know if I am, do you? I don't know if I'm forgiving like Jesus is forgiving. The final one is compassion. Colossians 3:12 says, put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering. And there's a story in Matthew chapter number 8, verses 1 through 4, I want to read it very quickly. It says, when he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him, and behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. Jesus put forth his hand, and he touched him, and he said, I will, be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed, and Jesus said unto him, see, thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. Do you consider yourself to be a compassionate person? I like to think I am, to some degree. I'm not a hugely compassionate person, but I want to think that I am a compassionate person. I want to dive into that guy's story for just a minute. There's just a few handful of verses that even talk about his life. So we're going to have to kind of ad lib here as we go, but I want to lay this situation out for you as perhaps this is how it is. 5 years ago, this man was out working in the fields, and he noticed his fingers were starting to feel a little bit different, starting to feel numb. There's some problems going on. Worked a couple more days, and numbness came in. Sores started to show up. He's knowing something is not right, and he's starting to see signs of things that he don't like what he's seeing because he knows what leprosy is. Leprosy is very common in that day. So the man comes in to his wife and talks to his wife, and he says, honey, things are just not how they need to be. There's something going wrong here. I don't know what's going on. And he looked at his child, and a little small child, and he thought, I can't even touch him. I'm afraid that I'm going to infect him. I don't know what to do. And his wife and him prayed together, and he said, yeah, you just need to go see the priest and see what they say. So he went to the priest, and he presented himself, and sure enough, the priest gave him that diagnosis that he did not want to hear. You're a leper. You can't be around people anymore. We're going to have to get you somewhere where you can't contaminate anybody. You're going to have to wear a certain type of clothing. You're going to have to make sure as you come around, a lot of times they would hang bells on them so that as they come, they would hear the bell and they'd say, watch out, leper, leper, death, death walking, it's a leper. So perhaps this man went for years. He wasn't able to talk to his wife. He wasn't able to talk to his kids. Then maybe 4, 5, 6 years later, he heard, there's this man, Jesus, that is the Son of God. And he went running up to the crowd and he saw that he was there. He knew that it was wrong. He knew that it was breaking the law for him to even be close proximity to anybody. But he knew this is the only chance I've got. What's the worst that can happen? Somebody kill me? That would be a relief at this point. The leper made his way up to Jesus somehow and he looked at him and said, Jesus, if you can, I know that you can make me whole. here's the beauty of it. Here's the compassion. I don't know how long that guy's been a leper. Let's say it's been 4 or 5 years. My friends, it's been 4 or 5 years since anybody has even touched him. They don't look his way. They don't talk to him. And they for sure don't touch him. Could Jesus have healed the man with a word? No doubt. Could Jesus have just looked his way, gave a wink, gave a nod, and the man be healed? Absolutely. But what did Jesus do? Jesus, filled with compassion, gave the man what he needed most, was somebody to touch him. Jesus walked over and he touched the man. A man that was contaminated and surely was going to contaminate Jesus and everybody else around. And he said, I will be thou clean. Instantly the man was clean. My friends, that is the heart of Jesus and that is compassion.
We would like to thank you for joining us. If you would like more information about our church, please visit rcbc.us and God bless you.